Hello.
Football on ESPN 1000.
Hello, Bert.
Albert Breer.
Hey, Bert.
Senior NFL writer for SI.com joins Cap and J Hood Tuesdays at 8.
Bert's it.
What?
You're it, Bert.
On ESPN 1000.
What do you mean I'm it?
We see, that's the game. I just tagged you, and you're it until you tag somebody else.
Albert Breer.
No, I'm not playing a game. I'm reading, Ernie, and I'm not it.
Okay.
On Chicago's Home for Sports.
But Bert is it.
That's awesome. Albert Breer joins us each and every week on Cap J Hood Morning Show. He writes for SI.com, MMQB, NFL Network. Like, he's as tapped into the beat as anybody in the world. And he's our guy every Tuesday at 8 a.m. And we welcome Albert back to the show. All right, Albert, it's the Nick Foles era. Most of the national prognosticators are gone. That's an awful 3-0 team. The Bears are a fraud. They're no good. The people have a different perspective. Do you? Now that Nick Foles has been named the starter?
No, I mean, I think we knew they were going to be sort of working around the quarterback position either way, at least through the early parts of the year. And, I think that this is sort of, you know, I think what we expected, which was, you know, this is going to be managed early on. And I didn't think they'd make a switch this quick. I don't think it was, you know, completely out of the question that they would have problems early on. And I think the fact that they're able to get through 3-0, speaks to how well they're able to play in other areas of the game. And again, like, manage what I think is a really tough situation. And it's not like the defense has been lights out the way that, like, the 18 defense was either. They've had to kind of through some things on that side of the ball, too.
Albert, where are the Bears among the other 3-0 teams in the NFL? Where do you place them?
I'd have to look at the list, but they're not the Chiefs.
Okay, so here's the list, just so you have it. Seattle, Green Bay.
Yeah, they're behind them.
Okay,
behind them.
Pittsburgh.
Behind them.
Kansas City.
Behind them.
Tennessee.
Ballpark. You know, maybe right in there. Tennessee's had their issues. They struggled to beat Jacksonville.
And Buffalo.
They've been tooth and nail every week. I think they're probably a little behind Buffalo. So I put them with the Titans. The Titans were in the championship game last year. So, I mean, like, look, like 3-0 is nothing to sneeze at, guys. You know, I understand they played an Atlanta team last week that's got serious, serious problems. You know, obviously the Giants are what they are, and the Lions just got off the mat this week. So, they've done what they can, you know, through 3 weeks and playing, you know, who they're playing against. But I do think they've shown some character. And, I think there is at least signs that there could be some growth there. You know, they can still play better defensively. Both the Lions and the Falcons were able to move the ball on them. And then, you know, I think offensively now, if you're really committed to going forward with Nick Foles, I do think that there's something extra to chase there. And I think Nick Foles, in a certain way, is going to probably allow you to get a little bit more out of your skill position players, too.
Hoodie?
Yeah, well, I want to find out about the Colts because they got the job done against the Jets 36-7. I'm wondering, Albert, what are you hearing about Indianapolis? Because Philip Rivers might be in the autumn of his career. So what's the future, the present and the future for the Colts?
Well, what's so interesting about the Colts, guys, is that I think if you'd asked me, I'd say 13 months ago when Luck was still on the roster, where they are, I would say they'd had one of the brighter futures of anybody in the NFL. And obviously the quarterback's a huge part of the equation there, but when Luck was there and you were looking at how Chris Ballard had been drafting, that was shaping up to be a really, really good team. And, you know, you look at the young players, frontline young players like Quentin Nelson and Darius Leonard, and, you know, even some of the promise they've seen from their young guys this year. Now, I know Michael Pittman's going to be out for a couple months, you know, but I think he's got a future. Jonathan Taylor looks like he's capable of being a bell cow back. I think the Colts are one of these teams where they've built up, like, everything around the quarterback to a certain level now. And the hope is that, you know, Rivers at least buys them time to find the next guy. And so, Luke Rivers is obviously a placeholder there, and there's going to be a lot of focus on the quarterback no matter which team it is. But that's a team that's built strong through the lines of scrimmage. They're really, really fast on defense. And if you look at the guys in the team who are 22, 23, 24 years old, you can definitely see where if you were able to find a long-term answer at the quarterback position, there's a really bright future there.
Albert, as you look at the injury to Tariq Cohen, and Devontae Freeman's been out on the market, and Leonard Fournette was on the market, and Adrian Peterson, is there a running back that's out there that could be a clear backup to the injury, or take the role of Tariq Cohen and a backup to David Montgomery? Because I'm not feeling the Cordarrelle Patterson thing.
It's a really good question. Freeman sat out there for a while. Fournette was available forever. And I think that the best, usually the way you look at these sorts of things is, running back, you should always be able to find an answer. And obviously this means, carrying a heavier load for David Montgomery. I think it's something you find a way to make it work. I mean, I Freeman had been out there. I don't know if there's another name guy out there. It's, again, sort of a position where generally, finding answers isn't that difficult. So I don't know that, I know I'm sort of talking in circles around this one. There isn't another big name out there, but I do think the way Matt Nagy coaches that offense, it's not a position that I see as being a huge, huge problem going forward as long as Montgomery stays healthy.
Albert, the Vikings are off to a really tough start, 0-3. What have you heard about what's going on in Minneapolis? I thought that they had a really good draft. I know that I like Jefferson, the pick, but it's not good enough to start at all for the Vikings.
Yeah, so at the end of last year, there were some questions about Mike Zimmer's job security, quietly, that it came up in week 16 and week 17. And I'd sort of been, I think, tipped off to maybe this is the one where, we get a shocker. And then, of course, they extend him right when that chatter started to pick up a little bit. So I think that there's some questions there. The other thing is they've gotten sort of old, in certain areas. And they had this core that grew up together. And now some of those guys are gone. Xavier Rhodes, obviously, in Indianapolis now. Guys like Harrison Smith and Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr and Kyle Rudolph on the offensive side, they've sort of progressively gotten older and older. And, there are certain position groups now where you've seen, stop gaps kind of come in. And, I think corner's one of those spots. The offensive line's another. And they've been able to sort of, duct tape those together for the last couple of years. And now I think you're starting to see leaks spring, and I think that's where you see the inconsistency on offense. I think that's where you see the big plays being given up on defense. So the roster still got some bona fide strengths. Obviously Dalvin Cook's a really good player. They're really strong in the front seven. But right now they've got areas to clean up where, and primarily along the offensive line and a corner, where you look and you see, those are areas where when you have flaws, it's really, really hard to hide them. And I think that's shown up over the first 3 weeks of the season.
So just to follow up on the Vikings, they're at Houston, 0-3, maybe the best 0-3 team in the league. Houston is going to be, fighting to stay alive. And then they play a Sunday night game at Seattle before they get a home game with Atlanta and then the bye week, and out of the bye they go to Green Bay. They are in real, real trouble.
Yeah, the Vikings and the Texans are two teams that I think you got to watch over the next couple of weeks because, they're teams that have been in the playoffs pretty consistently, teams that are getting older in certain areas and have, sought better answers in certain areas. And so that Vikings-Texans game on Sunday, absolutely no question about it, shaping up as a really, really big one. Now, because one of those teams is going to come out of this in tough shape. And both teams, are facing, a pretty challenging October schedule-wise. And so I think for both those teams, it's sort of, can we get to the midway point of the season where we still have something to play for? And then, you can look at those two team schedules and things lighten up to some degree where it's now it's a little bit more manageable and maybe you can get rolling a little bit. But I think definitely for those two teams, I mean, both those teams going into that game now 0-3, the loser, you know, at 0-4 is going to be, I mean, have some very, very serious questions to answer. And, you know, I think that, you know, you look at both teams and it's like you almost, you know, wonder if with the age of the roster, it's like, could they maybe be sellers when we get closer to the trade deadline? So that's definitely one I have circled because, it feels at least a little bit like an elimination game.
Albert, that inexplicable tie between the Eagles and Bengals, such a head-scratcher. How much are the Eagles' issues on Carson Wentz versus injuries or ineptitude with Philadelphia?
I think it's like that team's been built through the lines of scrimmage. You look at like where the Eagles have been from an offensive line standpoint, losing Andre Dillard, losing Brandon Brooks. They bring back Jason Peters. What does he have left? Jason Kelsey's getting older. And so you look like at a combination of age and injuries in the offensive line. That certainly hurts. But what I would say is, Carson Wentz, without question, has blood in his hands over this. It's, if you want to go back and you want to look at where he was 2 or 3 years ago, the guys I've talked to, who are coaching against him say this isn't the same player right now. He's holding onto the ball more than he has in the past. He's pressing. He's taking hits, and he's trying to do too much. And so I think what you're seeing out there is a player who's sort of gotten in his own head when you put all those together, those things together. And, you have a player like that, and now you got a roster that's sort of hurting around him. Like, this is a spot where if you've got a $34 million quarterback, you need that quarterback to sort of lift everybody else up. And he's not even capable of getting out of his own way right now. And so I don't know how the Eagles get themselves out of this. And, a big part of it's going to be sort of trying to fix where Carson Wentz is psychologically. And that's a really, really difficult thing to do on the fly, especially if you can't protect a guy, who's, dealt with a lot of injuries over the course of his career.
Make us smarter, Albert. Is there any interesting conversations that you had with a team or a front office person? What's in your phone right now that you really liked?
Love this question.
I wish I would. Maybe Danny can send me like a warning 5 minutes ahead of time.
Come on. The thing that you're avoiding right now, that's what we want. Give us that. Give us that right there.
All right. So you guys want something Bears wise?
No, for God's sake.
I can give you guys something Bears wise if you want that. Why don't I give you something else and then I'll give you a Bears thing on the quarterback competition?
All right.
Does that work?
Yeah.
All right.
Give us the thing that you don't want to tell us. Give us that right there.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing that I don't want to tell you. Well, all right. So looking at where. Looking at where the Chargers are right now with Justin Herbert. Okay.
All right.
Obviously he's a sixth pick in the draft, and they've seen some things over the last couple of weeks that quietly, I think, may make them reconsider where they are with Tyrod Taylor. I know Anthony Lynn's been very strong in Tyrod Taylor's corner, but there are little things that are happening in the games where he's showing pocket presence that they didn't think that he would develop this quickly. And if you guys go back and you look at the play that they made at the end of the game, do you guys remember, and I'm sure you guys saw it, with a hook and ladder that, I mean, should have been pulled off.
Yeah.
Go back and watch that clip and watch how he hung in the pocket. That's something that they've been kind of drilling him on for the last 2 months, that he can't just let his legs bail him out of those situations at this level. And so the fact that he stuck in there and he was able to kind of make that throw off platform was a huge, huge, huge thing because it showed that he's taking what they're teaching him and applying it on the field right now. And so there are little things like that happening, even though they wound up losing the game on Sunday to a team that isn't very good, where I think the Chargers are kind of back to the drawing board a little bit with their quarterback decision because Justin Herbert's slowly starting to build some momentum there. Where, and I think this is what it's going to come down to. He'll start again this week because, Tyrod Taylor's not recovered yet. But coming out of that week, if he takes more steps forward, I think the question then becomes, and you guys were probably here with Mitch a couple of years ago, do we really want to stop his progress now by taking him out of the lineup, or do we want to let him keep growing? And so that's one thing I can give you. I'll give you my Bears thing, too.
Yeah, we got to have the Bears nugget.
Okay, so here's the Bears thing. If you guys want to see the difference in the way the coaches in Chicago see Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles, okay, that play that they won, the play that they threw to Anthony Miller in the fourth quarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the second quarter, all right? And there's with 1 minute left in the first half, there's the exact same play call. And watch what Mitch Trubisky does on it. He holds the ball for too long, and he sails it over Anthony Miller's head. Mm-hmm. And you watch it, and the protection's clean there, right? And so the protection's clean. He holds the ball too long. He is not playing on time, and then he misses the throw, okay? Versus Nick Foles in the same sort of situation, like he doesn't get the protection. He takes a hit. He adjusts the route, and the ball's on the money. And so I know this, like that explains everything about why the Bears made this decision, because Nick Foles operates the offense. Nick Foles plays on time. Nick Foles plays on schedule. And that's why the Bears are, I think, at least optimistic about what Nick Foles won't just do, you know, in his personal performance going out there going forward, but what he's going to do for everybody else, what he's going to do for Robinson, what he's going to do for Jimmy Graham, what he's going to do for all the guys around him. If you're running the offense as it's called, that's going to give everybody a better chance. And I'm telling you guys, go back and look. 1 minute left in the second quarter, Mitch Trubisky runs the exact same play, gets perfect protection, holds the ball too long, ball over Anthony Miller's head, and the same thing, same call, late in the fourth quarter, Nick Foles wins the game while taking a hit, throwing the ball on time, on the money. So there's your Bears nugget. Go back and look, and you can see the difference between the two quarterbacks from the staff's perspective on those two plays.
Albert, love talking football with you, man. Have a great week, Hoodie, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Great stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
There you go. Great stuff from Albert Breer of the NFL Network and SI.com. All right, what does my friend, my partner, Jonathan Hood, expect to see from his White Sox as they take on the A's this afternoon in Game 1 of the postseason? Hoodie's perspective and your calls next.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
Our new morning show. This is Cap and Jay Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
I tell you what, Amy has the greatest voice. Our new voiceover person, Amy. She's amazing, Hoodie.
Absolutely. She does a great job. A welcome addition to our station, that is for sure.
Absolutely. All right. So, this afternoon, the White Sox will be in Oakland. They'll take on an A's team that's going to run Jesus Luzardo out there, who's left-handed. The White Sox coming into that game. Jonathan Hood, your club is 14-0 against left-handed starters, and the Vegas line this morning has the 7-seeded White Sox a minus 127 favorite over the 2-seed home team, Oakland. Your thoughts, my friend?
Well, a hell of a spot to be in when you've lost 8 out of your last 10. Now, you could do one of two things. You can dwell on that 8 of their last 10, losing to the Cubs 2 out of 3, being swept by the Indians, losing against the Reds 2 out of 3. We can look at that, or we could say, let's clean the slate, brand new season because it's the postseason, let's go. Now, we know what the Sox can do offensively. Once they get on that home run terror, man, it's hard to stop this team. But I can't help but to think about how poorly they played against the Cubs, how they limp into the playoffs, losing 8 of 10. It doesn't set right with me. And by the way, Cap, they earned that 7 seed because how they slip sliding right through the playoffs. It's too bad that they can't start at home. They deserve to be the 7th seed based on how they played. I know that the pitching is good enough. The starting pitching is good enough. Now can the offense come to the forefront?
The offense has a lot of the time in the 60-game shortened season lived and died by the home run, and they've got guys that can flat-out hit it. That Oakland ballpark, not conducive to the long ball in a lot of spots.
Yep. That's a concern. So now you're trying to manufacture some runs here. And I don't mean bunny and sacrificing. I'm talking about getting into the gaps and utilizing that speed, you know, doubling your way to a victory. I think it's going to be difficult for this team. But as I told you from the beginning on our shows, this is all gravy for me as a Sox fan to see my team in the postseason. I'm happy. And by the way, we have that game for you this afternoon here on ESPN 1000. You can hear White Sox baseball at 1:45 right here on Chicago's Home for Sports, the Sox and A's game. But I'm looking forward to it because I want to see the challenge, because whatever happens now, Cap, that will give Jerry Reinsdorf, that will give Rick Hahn the information that they need for next season. I'm not turning the page yet. I just don't like how they played down the stretch. And so that's my only concern here, is that whatever they did in the regular season here, the last 10 games, may carry over to this A's series.
It's going to be interesting to see how the two teams do, Hoodie, because the Cubs came into the White Sox series scoring 10 runs over a 7-game span. And all of a sudden, they win 10-0, they lose 9-5, they score 10 again, win 10-8. I mean, they just pounded the baseball over the weekend.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you. And I'm not sure anybody saw that coming.
Oh, stop.
No, I'm serious.
No. At least the one game, you knew the biggest lock in Vegas was anybody against Lopez. Anybody, including the Cubs.
But we thought that when Lopez pitched, I think it was against Minnesota the last game, and you ended up winning the baseball game. Like, I looked at the Cubs, they faced a lousy Pirates team, the worst team in baseball, and they couldn't hit JT Brubaker and Chad Kuhl, and all of these guys made them... The Cubs made those pitchers look like they were Cy Young.
Well, if you ever want to get right with your offense, you just take on, you know, Lopez. And Ray Lopez will give it up. And you saw how bad he was. That kid's just not ready. I don't know. I don't think he'll ever be a starter for the long haul for the White Sox as far as someone as a go-to guy. I don't see it. And then Cease. I mean, another good bet. It's Darvish. You always will look at Darvish and say, boy, if he's on the mound, he gives us the best chance to win. Now, here's the thing you didn't know. You weren't sure how many runs that the Cubs would score, but it is Dylan Cease. Cease, as Steve Stone has said in the broadcast many times, like, he does not have strikeout ability yet where he can get multiple guys out in an inning on a regular basis. He's got strikeout stuff, but it doesn't have the late movement that it needs. 4 2/3, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. When I see him out there, I always think if he can give you 5, that's good. But for a young pitcher, you expect more. And you didn't get that in that first game against the Cubs. So you know, as I look at this Sox team, I think that, and you and I have talked about this a ton, you respect the offense at the top. Like, Tim Anderson's a little bit of in a free fall a little bit as well at the top of the order. But now you're looking to find out, what does Rick Renneria have in store? Robert's going to play, sure, but what do you do with the catcher spot? What do you do with the DH spot? You got a DH hitting 167 in Encarnacion. If I can get, at some point in the series, McCann and Grandal to be in the same lineup, I'll be good with that.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch this game today, and then the Cubs back at work tomorrow. And it's going to be Kyle Hendricks in game one, and then Yu Darvish in game two. But I'm just telling you, man, and we're going to talk to Todd Hollinsworth in an hour. That team, the Marlins, have really, really good young pitching. Really good.
Well, how about that? How about this for a storyline? You start off this pandemic-riddled season where the Marlins are one of these teams that have all these issues with COVID-19, and they were able to dust themselves off to the point that they can get into the playoffs here. Hats off to Jeter and Mattingly and that team. I did not expect them to be in this spot. It's time for the Cubs to show the offense that they showed this past weekend and to get after this Marlins team. We've always said, look at this lineup. How come this lineup can't hit? Okay, so for sure you have a beast in Darvish that is a Cy Young Award-winning candidate, and Kyle Hendricks that can get it done. Let's see if the offense can match at least the first couple of starters. I think Lester also is going to bear down. You get a red-faced Lester, that's not going to work. But if you get a good Lester in there to give you a good 6, now it increases your chances to win the series.
By the way, Steve Stone said yesterday that if it gets to a game 3, if the Sox and A's are playing a deciding game 3, he would not start Cease, he would not start Dane Dunning. he would make it a bullpen day.
Ooh.
How about that?
Boy, that's not good. That's not good. You got two kids that are not ready for this limelight. They're not, Cap. If it's a bullpen day, what do you start with? Oh, I'm sorry. I know who to start. Cordero.
Of course. Yeah, Jimmy Cordero. Hey, Jimmy, I know you pitched all 60 games. Let's go, kid. You're up.
Usually I understand why someone's forearm is bigger than the other, but in this case, it's him being overused in the pitching staff.
All right. Cubs, Marlins, White Sox, A's. You're going to hear both games on this radio station. So you want to listen to quality baseball? You're going to listen right here on ESPN 1000. Our guy, Cubs star Anthony Rizzo, next.
Take that.
Take that.
This is Cap and Jay Hood. Enjoy the show each morning in your Instagrammies. At Cap Jay Hood on Instagram.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
All right, it's time. Brought to you by Templeton Rye Whiskey and Valparaiso University for Anthony Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo with Cap and Jay Hood.
Rizzo to right. Out of here. You want, and Rizzo sends one to deep right field. No doubt about it.
Anthony Rizzo.
Rizzo in the air. Well hit. It is a grand slammer. A monster shot for Anthony Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo on Cap and Jay Hood. Right here on ESPN 1000.
Rizzo, R-I-Z-Z-O.
All right. They're in the playoffs for the fifth time in 6 years. And he closed the season out on a really good run. Anthony Rizzo joins us now on Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000. All right, Anthony, this is what you signed up for. Navigate through a pandemic, 60-game season to try and win a World Series. And here you are. How are you feeling as you get ready to kick this thing off with the Marlins?
Feeling really good. Really, took some time to appreciate us winning the division. And, like you just said, 5 out of 6 years. It's something that definitely can't be taken lightly. And we're excited. And, this is definitely step one and where we want to be at the end of the year.
After playing the Cubs and Sox series, Anthony, how much momentum does the team have after that series? Because you pounded the Sox pretty good offensively.
Yeah, we needed that as an offensive unit just to go out and kind of get our rhythm back, get our swagger back a little bit, our edge, and carry that hopefully into the postseason and just continue to, play with that intensity and have good at-bats and grind pitchers.
So I was talking to Brandon Kinstler yesterday, who I loved dealing with and so wish he was here. And he said every single guy in baseball should play for the Chicago Cubs to experience what it's about. He said, I loved it there. It wasn't my decision not to come back. But I said to him, tell me about that team, what you would tell your current teammates about the Chicago Cubs. And he said, that's easy. The heart and soul of that team is Anthony Rizzo. He is an absolute warrior. He said, if you need a guy in a foxhole with you, he said, this is not a shot at anybody else on the team. Put Rizzo in there with you, and you're going to win a hell of a lot more than you lose. When you hear a former teammate and now their closer say that, how does that make you feel?
I really appreciate that. You know, playing with Kins for 2 years was nice. He was fun. We were texting back and forth last night a little bit, just kind of ribbing each other on what he's going to throw me and how I'm going to approach him. So, especially like seeing the Marlins, being from Florida and seeing the Marlins come through with all the COVID stuff and then continue to fight and make the playoffs is such a credit to Don Mattingly and that entire team and staff because, at the beginning of the year, it was a nightmare situation for them.
That was interesting, the comments by your teammate Chris Bryant when asked about you know, some of the slings and arrows that's been put his way, and he says, I don't give a blank. He doesn't really care. And he makes sure he repeated it so everyone could hear it very clearly. I want to know, first of all, how much did that comment surprise you? And secondly, I guess in a conversational way, I will just tell you that the Cubs have been up and down this season, but you're here. You're in the postseason. And I'm just thinking that whatever someone says on Twitter or what anyone says on Instagram about the Cubs, if it's a negative, why does it even matter? It's ultimately up to you guys in the locker room and to make sure that you flourish the way you want. So when he made those comments, is that how everyone feels? Or is that how Bryant feels? Like, he doesn't give a blank.
Well, I think it's just different case by case. I mean, when you do see things on Twitter, it's, you know, you think that, you know, the whole world thinks one way or a whole fan base, but really it's just five or six fans from different fan bases that will say things. And, you know, it's Chris does a really good job at canceling all that out, like most of us. But, you know, we're human. We see things all the time, and it's hard not to see things in our industry. So, but I think as professionals, we do have to, you know, eliminate all the outside noise, because we owe it to our teammates to be there every day for each other. And Chris does a great job at doing that.
In talking with Kinsler yesterday, I asked him about the difference in his mind. He didn't play for David Ross, between David and Joe Maddon. And he said, I just think from looking at their team, he said, and we've been under lock and key since we came back from the pandemic. So he said, I've been able to watch a lot of baseball. He said, it just looks to me to be a team that there's a, he goes, and this is not a shot at Joe. He said, Joe won a World Series and won a lot of games. But he said, I think David is absolutely more buttoned up about little details. Would you agree with that?
I think you see David wear it more a little bit on his sleeve with the attention to detail. And things will be addressed, you know, spot on, to where things could have been addressed a little differently. But as far as winning, you know, we're winning baseball games, and that's the formula. So Rossi's done an amazing job with everyone and navigating through this storm of the 2020 season. And it's sure every single team, every single manager will say that they've probably dealt with more off the field issues than even talking baseball. So for a first year manager and everything that has gone on this year, I think, you know, Rossi's told him he grades out as an A. I didn't give him an A plus or an A minus. I said a nice A.
There you go.
He'll take the A, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, Anthony, this postseason feel, I want to know how this feels for you, because, yes, the Cubs are in the postseason. But as you told us last week, like, sometimes – with the calluses in your hands, you're just grinding out every at-bat, and there's some players in the team that's like, if I come up there, I got to hit a 10-run homer, because this is how the game has gone in this pandemic era. Like, how does this feel differently than other postseasons for you?
Well, I mean, there's not going to be any fans, so the home field advantage, you know, coming to Wrigley Field and having a visiting team's bus roll up, and there's, you know, 20,000 people in the street and 30,000 in the stadium, you know, definitely can play some tricks on some guys. But, you know, it's, I don't know. We'll see. It you know, you try to downplay and just treat it as any other game, but these are our, we got to win, especially in these, you know, 3-game series and a 5-game series. It's every detail is so important. Not that it always isn't, but there's no room to make up in these short series.
I love that you came out and said, because I've always believed, and I've had people firing on me, hey, man, when you have a like, if you showed up, you're the Baltimore Orioles, and you finished 500, you're like, wow, we made a lot of progress. When you show up and you're the Cubs, the Yankees, I mean, teams that have been there, done that, and Anthony Rizzo says, we're not here to win divisions. It's great. We're here to win the World Series. And if you don't get the ring, you failed. And in the end, you didn't quite get to where you thought you should be. And I love that that is your approach. And I take it, correct me if I'm wrong, that is the approach that you have throughout your clubhouse.
For sure. But don't get us wrong. Winning the division is is not easy, and we take time to celebrate that and relish that, because it's not easy. And I mean, I just remember us in 2015 and how excited we were to make the playoffs and winning that wild card game. And, you know, the rest was kind of playing with house money, and that was the feeling. And then, I mean, there was zero expectation for us in 2015 to win the World Series, except the expectations we put on ourselves. But, you know, now it's totally different. And when you do see teams clinching for the first time in a long time, you it brings out, at least for me, that joy of winning it for the first time, the division, and going to the playoffs for the first time, because it's just such an amazing feeling.
Give us one thing you have not told us this year. Give us one thing that has surprised you about the Cubs' regular season. One thing that you say, wow, we're able to get through everything, and now we're in the postseason. Give us one thing that has surprised you this year about your team.
I would say the first thing that comes to my mind is just four teams from our division that are in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So what surprised, not really that was surprising me, but just the to get go on a long streak now, especially in our division, is just, it's so hard to get on a really big roll of a winning streak, because you see we have four teams in our division going to the playoffs, and you have three teams in the American League Central that are in the playoffs. So we've grinded all year playing really good teams, facing good pitching all year. So just gonna, I don't know. That's my take on the surprise. Just how good, you know, how good the divisions have been. And it's a lot of credit to the NL Central for having four teams in the playoffs.
Talking to Anthony Rizzo here on ESPN 1000. Jermaine says, can you ask Grizz, how is it to not be satisfied with just getting back to the playoffs, but to be hungry to make noise in the postseason? How hard is that for you? What type of effort does that take?
It's just extreme focus, which guys have put in all year. So it's really, we'll get to the field today. We'll have our workout. We'll have our hitters meeting, go over our plans, continue to talk about our approaches with the Marlins. Obviously, we haven't seen them this year. So it's a lot of video and watching guys' tendencies and all of that stuff. But it's one at a time. One at a time. You win a couple games in the playoffs, you really get this belief of just a new wave of energy, a shot of new energy. And winning one game could really boost you to a nice run.
Hey, man, we appreciate talking to you. We look forward to talking to you next Tuesday as you're hopefully moving on in another round. And again, thank you. Today's the day I'm walking 29 miles. Really appreciate your support and your family's support.
Oh, nice. Good luck, Cap. I hope you got some good shoes.
Yeah, I got a couple pair with me. I'll change off. So, yeah, ready to
awesome.
Rock and roll. So, thanks.
Awesome. Enjoy it.
Thanks a lot. Thank you
all
again,
right,
and
Cap.
Good luck.
Take care. Thank you.
There you go. That's Anthony Rizzo. All right, Hoodie, did the Bulls rush too quickly, not knowing that another guy might be out there? Did they hire the wrong guy? And Anthony Rizzo, also brought to you by Twin Peaks Restaurants. We'll talk Bulls with you next.
What?
Take that.
Itching your morning sports fix. Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
All right, so the Bulls have their new coach. I happened to speak to him yesterday. I've known him a long, long time. His name is Billy Donovan. He leaves Oklahoma City and comes to Chicago.
Yeah, did you drop my name?
I did not drop your name.
Why?
He said he enjoyed being on the show with you and Jonathan. He said, I enjoyed being on the show with you and Jonathan. And then we moved on just to talk about him coming to Chicago. I've known the guy since like 1991 or two. And he just talked about how excited he is. He goes, look, I loved my time in Oklahoma City, but he said, that is an amazing city I'm coming to. And my wife and I are so excited to be there and to get right into it. And so he's going to be coming back and forth a little bit, but he's jacked up, man. He is really fired up.
Just thought you might have, you know, dropped your partner's name. Maybe we can have reservations someplace, a nice dinner with the Donovans, something like that, maybe.
He actually said that they still have white peaches in Florida, and so he's going to bring some back for you.
Unity peaches.
Unity peaches.
That's all right. Well, that's good.
That's it.
Good to know.
I'm hoping that Danity will have some white peaches for me at the finish line when we finish the walk today. That's what I'm hoping. Like, hey, Cap, I saved a really tasty white peach for you, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Don't think so.
But Doc Rivers gets fired with the Clippers, and I made some calls yesterday because it sent shockwaves around the NBA like, oh, Doc's got fired. Well, come to find out that it's one thing to blow a 3-1 lead. No one's blown more 3-1 leads in their careers. I think on that list is Doc Rivers, Mike Fratello, and Lenny Wilkins, the most 3-1 leads blown in their career.
Wow.
But the issue, Cap, is that, you know, the team let down. They let Doc down, and Doc let the team down. And come to find out when I dug a little deeper yesterday, you know, as much as you and I in the basketball community respects Kawhi Leonard, you know, he walks around there playing basketball in nurse's shoes and is so unassuming, and it's kind of like he doesn't say anything. Well, you know what? He's like that in the locker room too. When you need someone to galvanize a team, you come to find out Kawhi Leonard's not that great a leader. He just does his thing.
Right. He's a great player. Not the guy that galvanizes the room.
Like, it's one thing to hear Doc, you know, for all the, you know, the entire season, come on, guys, come on, guys. And, like, after a while, that grates on a player. Now you want to hear from a player, like the leading player, to kind of bring the team together. And Kawhi doesn't do that. He's a great player, not a leader. That's what we come to find out. That's what I was told several times yesterday when I found out about why the Clippers and Doc Rivers parted.
So do you wish the Bulls had waited? Now they had no knowledge that he was going to be coming available. Or are you happy with Billy Donovan? Because I am thrilled with the hire of Billy Donovan. You know, the moment that they announced Billy Donovan was leaving OKC to pursue other opportunities, I was like, get a NetJets account, get down there. And basically that's what Arturas did. He was there 2 days later at his front door.
No, that's the right job. I think that's the right hire for the Chicago Bulls team.
Agreed.
And so, I mean, if you're waiting longer, then say Doc stays. Now what are you looking for? You're looking at a young assistant. No, I mean, I assume, based on the jobs that are out there, Brooklyn, Houston at the top, Indianapolis is right there as well. I can see Doc taking a year off. I can see that to look for something better.
Yep.
But I think he needs to just chill for a little bit, and he'll get right back in there. But I just know that Clipper team let him down, and he can only do so much. But there was never that feeling of, guys, we got a 3-1 lead. Let's go. We're almost here. To lose to Denver in that fashion was embarrassing for a team that's got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on it. You'd think that those two can push the Clippers over the top. It did not happen. And so Ballmer, who, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, loves this Clippers team, he just thought it was best. And I think that's the right thing. Doc will coach again. He just needs a fresh start.
All right. Are the Bears a better team today with Nick Foles under center? Do you now believe? We're going back to your calls. 312-332-3776. That is in exactly 2 minutes.
Take that.
Take that.